From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Our focus today, North Carolina House District 19, which encompasses the southern portion of New Hanover County. Republican Representative Ted Davis Jr. has served that district for 3.5 terms. He is now seeking his fourth. In 2012, he was appointed to finish out the term of Danny McComas, who stepped away to take the helm of the North Carolina Ports Authority Board of Directors. Davis went on to win the seat in that fall's election. This year, he faces challenges from Libertarian David Perry and Democratic candidate Marsha Morgan. Today, we'll meet the candidates in alphabetical order, beginning with the incumbent. Representative Ted Davis, welcome to Coastline.
Good morning, Rachel. Thank you for letting me be here.
Good to have you here. And today's interviews, of course, are pre-recorded. Ted Davis, most of this campaign's focus, both yours and your opponent's, is on the issue of drinking water and emerging contaminants. In fact, you are senior chair of the House Select Committee on North Carolina River Quality. There is an argument regarding the legislation that was passed to address this issue that the governor already had the power to shut down Chemours, and this is something that was also part of this recent legislation. He already had that power through the Department of Environmental Quality. Opponents of the new legislation say if it came to a court battle, judges tend to side with more specific laws. And so this could actually further protect other polluters because this recent legislation targets Chemours and PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl compounds. Is it possible that you are protecting other polluters with this new law rather than adding more teeth?
Not at all, because one of the things we looked at in enacting this legislation was you cannot direct something at one business by itself. So there's nothing in the legislation that mentions Chemours, because once again, we don't have the authority to do that. We would lose a court battle because it's discriminatory against only one business entity. So we were very careful to try to give the governor the authority that if he felt like under the circumstances in each particular incident that it was justified that he would have the authority to shut that particular business down. So I think it gives him more teeth rather than taking anything away.
Another point of contention between Republicans and Democrats on this issue is funding the North Carolina Policy Collaboratory instead of DEQ and DHHS. The collaboratory, as we know, is headed by Jeff Warren, former advisor to Senate Leader Phil Berger. DEQ is the regulatory agency, so why wouldn't legislators fund, why would you fund research that takes part in a separate body, adds another layer, and doesn't have any regulatory teeth? Only DEQ can regulate.
That's an excellent question, and people need to understand, because it is confusing, Rachel, and I appreciate the opportunity to explain. And looking at this legislation, you need to understand it takes cooperation between the Senate and the House to get anything passed. And looking at this legislation, I was the one that was pushing the funding for DEQ. The Senate was pushing for the collaboratory to take over the responsibility for the unknown or the emerging compounds. And in order to reach that resolution that enabled us to enact the legislation, both sides, it was give and take. The justification for turning the unknown compounds over to the collaboratory was because the collaboratory would be working with universities such as Duke University, NC State, where, as you know, Dr. Canapi was the man who discovered Gen X. All of those experts, all of the academia support, all of their machinery that they have will be able to allow them to look at and try to find out the compounds that we don't know about. Now, having said that, once a compound is known, it would then go over into the purview of DEQ because they are responsible for monitoring and they are responsible for the enforcement, as you have said. When I took over that committee, which actually I asked the Speaker of the House to form that committee because I did not feel like there was enough being done to address the Gen X problem. So I went to him and I asked him, please let the House show everyone we are serious about this. We want to try to resolve it as best we can and address it. And he was good enough to do that. He named me senior chair. And we had multiple committee meetings where Dr. Canapi came. We had other experts to come. We had chemists. I mean, it was unbelievable. We had DEQ to come, Department of Health and Human Services to come. Because I felt like, Rachel, how can you address a problem unless, number one, you find out how did it happen, what caused it, and look at the ways that you can possibly address it. So there were two things that I found out that were very disturbing. Number one is that nobody really knows the effect that Gen X or any of these other emerging compounds have on a human being because there have been no tests. There have been tests on lab rats and things like that, but not a human being. And that's scary, not to really know what effect it could have on you. The other was, you can't monitor what you don't know. So all these people that were saying, well, give all this money and give all these people to do monitoring won't do any good if you don't know what's in the water and you're looking for. So I feel like and agree with what was done because it will put looking for the unknown with the chemist, the experts, to be able to do that using the equipment that they have, and also funding DEQ, which, by the way, everybody keeps talking about what we didn't do for DEQ. Nobody mentions that we gave them over $5 million as initial funding to address the Gen X issue, of which funding was included for them to hire new positions that they say they need. Nobody mentions that, Rachel, because there's so much false, misleading information out there. And that's why I ask the people, go to see the budget. The numbers don't lie. They're there. And people need to know what the truth is. So when they vote, they can vote their conscience based upon facts, not upon a bunch of campaign rhetoric that's not true.
Well, one of the other criticisms around this legislation is the mass spectrometer that was recently funded was not the high-resolution tandem liquid chromatography mass spectrometer. It was a lower-end version that only detects this certain type of compound. And if you're talking about this issue of emerging contaminants and the fact we know Gen X is only a tiny percentage of that chemical load in the water, why wouldn't you fund the highest-end equipment you could find? It on the face of it, looks like you might have been pandering to industrial lobbyists.
No, not at all. It's very simple. Like I just said, we have turn the responsibility for the unknown compounds over to the laboratory. They have that type of spectrometer. We have put monitoring in the hands of DEQ. The spectrometer that the funding went for DEQ does that. There's no reason to give DEQ that high caliber type of spectrometer when they're not going to be responsible for discovering the unknown compounds. And that's why the money for the spectrometer that was given to them is exactly what they need to complement the other equipment they have to monitor the known compounds.
So this has been pretty widely reported, I think first reported by WRAL, Preston Howard, president of the North Carolina Manufacturers Alliance, also happens to be former director of the Division of Water Quality, wrote to state lawmakers and said broader testing of the water supply will, quote, almost assuredly reveal that there are many, many chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and other consumer products in those water supplies, end quote. He warned you not to open a Pandora's box, and on the face of it, it looks like legislators complied, and people are saying, so why were industrial lobbyists able to help craft a bill that would benefit them when we're talking about something as basic as the drinking water supply?
First off, I don't know Preston Howard. Second off, I don't ever remember meeting Preston Howard. And also, Preston Howard had no influence whatsoever on what I did as far as what I was trying to do in that particular piece of legislation. I know in all transparency that he did write that letter, and I know that he may very well have talked to other legislatures, but once again, it had no impact on what I did.
Fair enough. You are running a campaign ad on this issue that says you've empowered the governor to shut down Chemours, the company that excreted Gen X into the drinking water supply. And you say in this ad that's something that, quote, Marsha Morgan has failed to do. Marsha Morgan and her liberal friends prefer to play politics and stall. What do you mean by that? Considering she's not in office, she doesn't have any policymaking capability. What are you saying there?
Certainly, it's very simple. I asked during these committee meetings that I've had on river quality, and DEQ was there. Rachel, I asked the Department of Environmental Quality, what would it take? What does Chemours have to do for you to go forward and shut them down? And they never did anything. And yet Chemours, time after time after time, was putting Gen X back into our rivers, emitting it into the air, which, as you know, falls down and gets into the ground, and that's why our groundwater is being polluted. It was fascinating one time. We had a scientist come in, and we had a map of all the wells that were contaminated. And then he put a map of where the wind blows. And it was amazing to see the correlation between the direction of the wind and where these impacted wells were. And that's why I asked DEQ, how much more are we going to have to put up with before you guys pull the trigger and do what you need to do and shut these people down until they can guarantee that they can operate their business without contaminating our water? They never did anything.
Can they do that?
Yes, they can do that.
We also hear about the Hardison Amendment, which, you know, essentially says the state agency can't regulate to more stringent standards than the federal agency.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I made one of the presentations for DEQ to explain what they would have to do to shut somebody down. It's a very lengthy process. They have to notify them of their violation. Then the business has X amount of time to correct the violation. If they don't, then they can do a cease and desist order to shut them down. They can appeal that to, as an administrative hearing. Then they can appeal that to court. It's a very, very long, drawn-out process. So that was one of the things why I was hoping, by giving the governor the authority, rather than waiting for DEQ to have to jump through all these hoops to shut them down, that he could go ahead and do it. Because once again, the legislature can't shut Chemours down per se. We have to do things across the board as it relates to all businesses.
We're all aware that the political climate, the public conversation, has become even more polarized than the last time we talked about campaigns in an election season 2 years ago. What do you think you can do, if anything, to move the ball down the field in terms of bringing back civility, compromise, negotiation?
Let me go back to the previous question, because I didn't answer it, everything that you asked. What I'm saying in that ad is, you don't have to be in office to start a petition. You don't have to be in office to ask the governor to use his authority to shut a business down. You can do that. Marsha Morgan could join my petition. She could sign my petition. She could start her own petition. I know the governor was down here to help her with a fundraiser recently. She could have talked to the governor then and said, you know, governor, you really need to do this. People down here are really worried about what's going on and the failure of the business to be able to allow to continue on rather than being shut down until the problem's fixed. None of this has been done. That's all I'm saying. She has just as much right to do what I'm doing as a citizen. You don't have to be an elected official to do that.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Representative Ted Davis, Republican incumbent in North Carolina's House District 19. There are 6 proposed constitutional amendments on the November ballot. They have faced public criticism, even battles in court. All 5 former living North Carolina governors, 3 Democrats, 2 Republicans, have spoken out against the 2 amendments that would transition judicial vacancy and state elections board appointment power to the legislature. Other critics of these amendments call them naked power grabs, a chance to take power away from the executive branch. Is that a fair characterization? Particularly when it comes to the power to appoint judicial vacancies.
Let me put it this way. I support the amendments. But the thing about this, Rachel, and I've talked to many people about this, the great thing about these amendments is so many times the legislature is criticized because they enact things that people don't feel like they've had enough input in. Well, here is a chance to look at things that the Republicans would like to do, and rather than going and doing them through the legislature, we are actually going to give the people who elect us and who vote in this state the right to say, you know what, I don't like them all, or I like some of them, or I like them all. Whatever you want to do, my advice to everyone who might be listening is to please do your research, find out what they're about, and if you don't like them, don't vote for them. If you do like them, do vote for them. But just vote your conscience and appreciate at least the fact that you're having the opportunity to call the shots on whether or not this legislation is enacted through the Constitution.
In 2016, because of all of the municipalities in your district that came out with resolutions against offshore drilling and seismic testing, you then said, I now adopt that position. I oppose that activity. Are you still there?
Yes. I've never openly come out and said that I'm in favor of offshore drilling. There was a lot of talk early on about it, and the thing that concerned me the most was you needed to look at what possible environmental impacts could it have. Plus, what was the state going to get out of it? I mean, are we going to get any income from this if it was to happen? And I actually went to some presentations that were given by oil companies as well as were given by the environmental community to try to get a better understanding of what the impact might be. And no, I'm not in favor of it.
Representative Ted Davis, Jr., thank you so much for taking the time to share your views.
My pleasure, and thank you for letting me be here.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet Democratic challenger Marsha Morgan. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. North Carolina's House District 19 covers the southern portion of New Hanover County. That means the beach towns and the Myrtle Grove area. Republican Ted Davis has held the seat since his appointment in 2012. He's been reelected three times and is now seeking his fourth term. He faces two challengers this year, Libertarian David Perry, whom we'll meet in the last segment, and Democratic challenger Marsha Morgan, who joins us now. Morgan worked as director of master's theses for the Department of Physical Education at Smith College for 2 years. She then enlisted in the Army, attained her commission, and served in Korea, Germany, the Netherlands, and the Pentagon. After retiring as a colonel, she returned as a contractor to the Army and says she continues to provide logistical support to soldiers. Marsha Morgan, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much for having me.
Today's interview, as a reminder, is pre-recorded. Why, Marsha Morgan, did you go from a life in academia to the Army? What led you to enlist?
That's a very complex answer. The short answer is, I'll say a 2x4 up the side of the head from God redirected me. It was through a series of, deep time in prayer that caused me to change and say that this is the direction that I'm being refocused. I had no knowledge of the military, so it was all a very new and foreign environment for me.
Not every candidate talks about their religious life as directing their major life choices. How much of a role does your spirituality play in your life?
I think it plays a great role in it. It's part of the way that I was raised, and it certainly has been a big part of major decisions in my life. It gives me a great deal of security and comfort. I believe it gives me a very strong sense of what's right and wrong and of honor and integrity.
And what is the religious tradition that you're part of?
I was raised in the Methodist Church, went to a Methodist undergraduate school. Within the military, because it's very difficult in a number of places to have any one religion, I wound up being involved in and participating in a number of different religions and learning a lot about a number of different ones.
When Democratic Governor Roy Cooper proposed a plan to deal with the unfolding drinking water quality issue after scientists discovered this unregulated and potentially toxic compound in the river, Cooper's plan included more money for the Department of Environmental Quality, which had been seriously cut over the last several years. The Republican majority rejected that plan and instead went a different way, funding some studies. Part of the argument for that approach is that the agency charged with regulating the compound fell down on the job. This had been happening. This compound had been getting dumped into the drinking water supply for the last three decades or so. And so clearly funding that agency wasn't preventing the compound from going into the water. What do you say about that approach and the way that was handled at the legislature?
Because I don't know enough about how strong DEQ was in the earlier years and what their charter was, I don't think they knew enough to look for that particular compound. My thought on the approach to Gen X would be, let's pick another disaster. If your house is on fire, you put out the fire, and then you go back and you figure out what's wrong, and you fix it from that point on. In terms of Gen X, as soon as they discovered it was a problem, the solution is do whatever you have to stop that pollution going into the water, and then go back and figure out what do we do from here moving forward.
And there is no Gen X currently being dumped into the Cape Fear River.
That is correct. What we don't know is the other chemicals that are there and what impact they may have. Gen X has a sexy name, so it's easy to say, we remember it. But there are many other compounds that are there that we know nothing about. We don't know what their impact is on the health, on the environment. We need to do a lot more studying.
And so why would you be a good person to go to Raleigh to move that issue forward?
I think one of the things that I offer as a future representative of this area is my background. I'm at a point now where I don't owe anybody anything. And I have a reputation for getting things done. So my approach is to go in, figure out what the problem is, work toward a solution, and move from there. And it doesn't matter to me that much about am I stepping on some corporation's toes? My concern is the people I represent. And I will always put people over corporations.
And are you alleging that your Republican opponent has put corporations over people? Is that what's going on? Are you not satisfied with the Republican response to the drinking water supply issue?
That is correct. I am not satisfied with the Republican response. The monies that they put toward it were, first of all, inadequate. They were so closely defined and directed that they were ineffective in terms of what type of mass spectrometer should we get. And based on, I'll say, input from Chemours, they selected one that would only identify a specific compound versus a little bit more expensive one that will identify a wide range of compounds. And we need the ability to look across the board.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Marsha Morgan, Democratic candidate for North Carolina House District 19. She's challenging Republican incumbent Ted Davis, who's held the seat for 3.5 terms and is seeking his fourth. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. Since Hurricane Florence dumped waste from hog lagoons and coal ash into North Carolina's waterways, there has been talk of further scrutiny of, for instance, the way hog waste is managed in the state. But this industry is critical to North Carolina's agricultural economy. And also, when you really look at the number of hog lagoons that breached, it's a tiny percentage. Do you think Hurricane Florence warrants another look at how hog waste is managed? And how would you move the hog farm discussion forward in the state?
I think it's not just the Florence, but it is how they deal with the hog waste on a daily basis. The issue of the neighbors to the hog farms and the way that they aerate the waste, and it lands on neighboring communities, usually communities that are less affluent and have other issues. It's almost like you're taking advantage of the neighbors. So there are better technologies available. They cost some money.
They cost more.
Yes, they do cost more. There are other states that have applied those technologies, that have required those technologies to be applied. I think that we have every right as a state protecting our people to do the same thing. The CEO of Chemours in China made around $750 billion last year. They can afford to make these changes. We need to protect our local hog farmers.
You mean Smithfield.
Smithfield,
right?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. Just checking.
Yes. We need to protect our local farmers. They are not the ones that need to carry the burden of that. But we can go back to Smithfield and to its owners and say, you need to provide this technology. You need to institute this technology. I think because of the magnitude of the pork industry here, we are not at risk of losing it. I think we're too big a market for them to say, we're going to pick up and go someplace else. There aren't that many other places that they can go without a tremendous expense. It's going to be cheaper for them to make this correction and to be a good neighbor than it is to pick up and go somewhere else.
Talking about being a good neighbor, we've watched some of these lawsuits happen, these nuisance lawsuits over, you know, neighboring hog farms, and those awards have been seriously cut by state statute. But people who say those lawsuits shouldn't be moving forward often say, why do those people live there? If it's bothering them, why don't they move? In most cases, the hog farms were there first.
I don't know the number of who was there first. For some people, it's the only place they can afford to live. But it goes beyond, yes, you may realize that there's going to be an odor to living there, and you certainly will know that when you drive up. I'm from Texas. I've gone by cattle farms for a long time. There are certain things that you understand. I don't think you fully comprehend that they are going to be spraying waste on your home, and that's going to get into your home, into your clothing, onto the side of your home. You don't understand that that's going to be part of the package deal.
We know that North Carolina is still struggling to attract and keep excellent teachers in its public schools, largely due to issues of funding. What do you think the state's responsibility is along those lines?
I think we have an obligation to protect our students and to develop them fully. In a nutshell, two resources we have you can't afford to mess up: your children and your environment. If you mess those up, it takes too long to recover. So let's start with the students. In order to fully grow them into what they are capable of being, you have to have a strong structure. Your school system has to be good. To have a good school system, it really hinges on having great teachers. You cannot have great teachers if you are not paying them, if you are not recognizing them for what they are doing. So the first thing is, we need to let them know that we value what they do. You do that by paying them an appropriate salary, not something that's $10,000 below the national average. You show them that respect by making sure that they have the right resources in their classroom, that the class size is appropriate, that they can actually teach and not just try and monitor and count heads. There are a number of things that we can do to make our schools better.
It was 2016. When your opponent, Ted Davis, publicly announced he unequivocally opposes offshore drilling for oil and natural gas. That's a break with many of his Republican colleagues in Raleigh. But ultimately, Raleigh might not have much say in whether that kind of activity moves forward in the Mid-Atlantic. How would you tackle the issue if you were sent to Raleigh?
I am 100% behind Governor Cooper in fighting against having offshore drilling come anywhere near our North Carolina coast. I'm not only concerned about the impact of the drills and the oil wells and the potential environmental spills that could happen, but I am opposed to the testing that would happen beforehand.
The seismic testing.
The seismic testing, because of the impact that it has on the wildlife and the marinas. So the whole issue is one that I think we need to fight very hard to stay away from. We need to look at alternate forms to fossil fuel industry. I live at the beach. We have a lot of wind. We have a lot of sun. We have no excuse for backing away from utilizing those assets and making the most of them.
The United Nations released a climate change report that is nothing less than alarming and emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions by 45% by 2030 in order to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius. Does North Carolina have any role, in your opinion, in contributing to this effort? If so, how?
I think that all of us have a role in that to some degree. All of us can do better. As a state, yes, can we find ways to control our industries to have fewer emissions that impact the climate change? Can we do better at recycling? Can we encourage going to alternate energy sources that don't have the same negative impact on the environment? I think there are things that we can do.
Your opponent, Ted Davis, has racked up some hefty seniority in the House. He is the senior chair of the House Select Committee on North Carolina River Quality. More importantly, he's the vice chair of the Rules Committee, which frequently controls how and whether proposed legislation ever sees the light of day again. Why should voters reject that level of power in the State House? You would be going in as a freshman.
I would be going in as a freshman. One of my concerns is, as a person with that level of seniority, he has not been using it effectively. I come from a background within the military of strong leadership. I would say some of the examples would be, I'll go to the ABC bill. He was on the committee, he was the chair of the committee that brought it forward. It had his name on it. He said, oh, well, no, it only has my name on it because I was the chairperson. It's not that I really support it. My position is, if you are really a strong leader and you're going to make use of that seniority, you ought to have some control over your committee members. You ought to have the ability to convince them one way or the other. If there's an action you don't agree with, you ought to be able to argue it effectively to keep it from moving forward. Another example would be, as the senior chair of the River Committee, yes, he got the House to support him, but without the coordination with the Senate, that action went nowhere. And in fact, he was criticized because it was an ineffective bill. So that's part of the package.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Marsha Morgan, thanks so much for sharing your views with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back, we'll meet Libertarian Party candidate David Perry. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're meeting the candidates for North Carolina House District 19, which covers the southern portion of New Hanover County. Republican Ted Davis has held the seat since his appointment in 2012. He's been reelected three times and is now seeking his fourth term in the face of challenges from Democrat Marsha Morgan and Libertarian David Perry. According to David Perry's campaign website, he grew up in New Hampshire. After getting a master's of education, he worked with students dealing with serious disabilities at the Perkins School for the Blind in Massachusetts. He then shifted focus to software engineering and information technology. He is now a senior software engineer at the Corning plant in Wilmington, and he joins us now. David Perry, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me, Rachel.
Just a reminder that this interview is pre-recorded. David Perry, you allege on your website that one major party would like to have a nanny state, the other would like a police state. Both, you say, would direct us towards authoritarianism. As a libertarian, which specific freedoms do you think North Carolina's state government is impinging upon?
Yeah, unfortunately, gone are the days of Reagan and limited government, where government is the problem and not the solution. It seems like these days, Republicans have forgotten all those principles and really want to crack down on security, violate our Fourth Amendment rights on a routine basis. So from Republicans, that's what you usually see.
And from the Democratic viewpoint, just too much government? Is that fair?
Yes, I think we can do a lot better job governing ourselves here locally, not centralized in Raleigh or in Washington, D.C., and that we can run our own personal lives without a bunch of rules and regulations and laws.
What is the line between state government and local government? Can you give us an example of an issue that is currently legislated by the state, but you really think should be at the local level?
Well, I mean, one big one for right here is education. I really believe education needs to be a local issue. And if we only had the money here, we could fund and manage our own schools a lot better than the bureaucrats up there in Raleigh. One-size-fits-all solutions for all school districts usually don't work. I believe the people of this county would be more than willing to shell out a little bit extra in a county income tax if they could get their state income tax eliminated in order to fund great schools and pay our teachers better.
So you would have state income tax entirely eliminated?
That's correct.
And then the other functions of state government, how would you pay for those?
Well, I think the state government needs to, you know, relegate its stuff to countywide threats. I mean, the purpose of government, according to Jefferson, is to secure our life, liberty, and property. When it comes to state government, it should be dealing with issues like genetics that cross county lines, that are threats to those things, and not trying to micromanage our community by a lot of ABC laws, for instance, that come down on our bars and restaurants and how you can conduct business. Really, that should be no concern of our state government.
You also say on your campaign website that it was the nomination of Donald Trump as the Republican Party's candidate that caused you to split with the Republican Party. You had been a Republican for many years. What specifically about the current president's nomination led you to that decision?
It wasn't necessarily him per se as opposed to what we ended up with. I was a supporter of Rand Paul, and I really loved his father, Ron Paul. He's an inspiration to me to this day. I went to go see him down in Charleston a couple months back. But unfortunately, the liberty movement that I believe that Ron Paul started in 2008 and 2012, I thought was going to take root. So I hung on a little bit longer with the Republican Party. But now it just seems like they've lost all bearings towards what their principles of limited government were supposed to be.
And so would you compare the federal government to North Carolina's state government in terms of loss of liberty?
Yes. I mean, I think everybody wants to centralize everything. So once our founding fathers thought that our federal government should be very small and that states should have most of the power. But I also believe that percolates down to where our state government should be a lot smaller and a lot less important than, say, our county government.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with David Perry, Libertarian candidate for North Carolina House District 19, which covers the southern portion of New Hanover County. He's challenging Republican incumbent Ted Davis Jr., who's held the seat for 3.5 terms and is seeking his fourth. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. What exactly, you kind of mentioned Gen X in passing, and I know that is certainly an important part of your platform, but before we get to that, what other issues do you think state government should be addressing?
One of the things that, besides getting out of a lot of things that they're already in, because there's a lot of things that they need to, you know, seize power and give it back to the counties. So, I mean, of course, there are things that are statewide threats. And I think one of the things is corruption, political corruption that's going on here. I do think we need, it's happening locally, and it's happening on the it's also happening at the statewide level where, you know, companies are basically buying our politicians. And, you know, just a story today in the Port City Daily where a corporate developer is not going to have to pay any penalty for cutting down 50 trees, whereas a local resident who had six trees about ready to fall on his house has to pay $1,000 worth of fines and has to plant 25 new trees. So it's this sort of thing that I believe when it comes to corruption that the state government needs to come down on, whether it's local or state.
So one of the key issues, as you know, for people in House District 19 is clean drinking water. The public has been grappling with the news over the last year and change that multiple chemical compounds that are currently unregulated and with current technology can't be filtered out are in the drinking water supply for several hundred thousand people. In light of this news, what do state legislators need to do? They've certainly passed legislation to address Gen X. Has that been enough, or is there more that needs to happen?
I believe that there's been some funding of, as Representative Davis, who's been in charge of the committee to take care of Gen X, has committed some money to testing and research, but not enough teeth, not enough power given to the DEQ to be really transform itself into a watchdog agency. Because this is a legitimate function of state government, to protect our life and our health from statewide threats such as Gen X. So this is definitely within their scope. Unfortunately, you know, Chemours and their parent company DuPont have been doing this for decades. They did it in the Ohio River Valley with C8, and they're doing it here. They knew it was bad, and they kept on dumping it, and yet they just figure the cost of litigation is just easier to pay for than transforming their business's processes. So one of the things that I think we need to do as far as DEQ is to be able to turn it into almost like a restaurant inspector. If they see pollution going on, they need to come down and shut them down until they clean up.
Now, from where DEQ sits, and there may be more nuances to this, but the compounds that were coming out of Chemours currently didn't have standards set by the federal government, and therefore DENR, or you know what is now DEQ, didn't have standards for those compounds.
And I agree. And see, I think we have it the wrong way. You know, we have these basically pollution poison permits issued by the federal government and the EPA standards, and what it should be, of course, the Hardison, you know, amendment doesn't help. It basically says that North Carolina is not allowed to have more stringent environmental controls. So I thank Deb Butler for that in her opposition to that. So there are some ways that me and Marsha Morgan do see eye to eye on certain things. But we need to get tougher, and basically the position should be is you don't get to put anything into the water unless it's proven to be safe rather than vice versa.
We're talking with David Perry. He is the Libertarian candidate for North Carolina House District 19. He's challenging Republican incumbent Ted Davis Jr. David Perry, you have a solution to the opioid crisis.
Well, I wouldn't call it a solution, but a start. And you know, a lot of people will talk about cracking down on the drug dealers and the heroin dealers, and that just combats supply. It doesn't combat demand. And as we found out during alcohol prohibition, if there's demand, there will be supply. So I believe that's a waste of taxpayer money. What we need to do is find solutions that, you know, affect demand. And here, one of the easiest ways of doing it is to legalize medical cannabis. I think there's growing support. I believe that Elon University poll recently said that 80% of the public was for it, yet our General Assembly has done nothing to legalize medical cannabis because it's been used for centuries upon centuries to treat pain. So why not give our doctors another option to treat people with pain rather than having to prescribe addictive pills?
So you're talking about medical cannabis, not marijuana just legalized across the board.
Eventually, I do believe in recreational marijuana. I just don't believe that there's the support for it at this time. But hopefully, we will eventually get there. But I do believe that we can do that on a countywide level. So that's why I'm open to giving each county the ability to legalize it recreational marijuana on a local level. But statewide, we need medical cannabis right away.
Have you heard about any of these studies published in peer-reviewed medical journals that show marijuana is not a harmless recreational substance? Rather, it contributes to permanent cognitive impairment in some cases, particularly in younger people. In fact, we recently had a doctor on Coastline, Dr. Andrew Farah, who's written the book Hemingway's Brain, who looks at this stuff, and he writes there are numerous acute as well as long-term neuropsychiatric consequences of cannabis use, in addition to acute psychosis and agitation. He looks at the long-term issues of cognitive decline and cannabis possibly being a contributory cause of schizophrenia. That's pretty serious.
I'm certainly not recommending that people go out and use marijuana recreationally. I don't. But I do believe that it's not the purpose of government to tell us what kind of risk we can take with our own personal lives. Now, I would recommend using marijuana on a medical basis if you're under a doctor's supervision, and I think that's a completely different matter altogether.
What are the priorities in the coming years for transportation in the Cape Fear region as far as you're concerned? Would you want to increase state funding for projects here?
No, actually, but I would like, as I said, I would like to see us eliminate the income tax and bring back some of the money back here. We're throwing, for every dollar we throw to Raleigh, we're lucky if we get 25 cents back. And we're begging and pleading with the Department of Transportation to maybe build us this road here or this bridge there. And, you know, if we collect that tax here, if we keep revenue generated in New Hanover County and make it stay in New Hanover County, maybe we can come up with our own roads and our own bridges and our own solutions to our transportation problems.
Offshore drilling is something that people on the coast have expressed, up and down the coast, coastal stakeholders have expressed opposition to. Is that something that you would support or oppose if you were in the legislature?
Right. I'm on the fence on this issue. My initial gut reaction was no, because I don't think that the federal deal that's going to be going on, I pretty much just think it's cake. Now, I have talked to some people and who are basically saying that at this point, all they want is an exploration to see what's down there. So I'm not necessarily opposed to that. But if it was going to happen, I would allow for the exploration right now to see what's going to happen. See what you got.
You would allow for the seismic testing to see if there's a resource there.
And how much would they offer the people of North Carolina to take that risk? Because I do believe it's a huge risk. But instead of the money going to our state government, I want to see it like Alaska. I want to see people get a dividend check if they decide to do it. And I also would want to insist that the voters get a vote on it.
The United Nations recently released a climate change report that sounds the alarm and emphasizes the importance of cutting emissions in order to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius. Do you think North Carolina has any role in contributing to this effort to slow emissions or cut?
Well, then, and again, yeah, that's an environmental issue that affects all of us here in North Carolina. So I have no problems. You know, I haven't reviewed all the scientific evidence, but it seems somewhat overwhelming that this is happening, and we should be able to take standards to make sure that our climate is not growing artificially because of what's happening with manufacturing.
And you made it clear that you think counties should be doing their own work on public education in terms of funding it more according to their own standards. So with the difficulty that the state has had in keeping and attracting really good teachers, is that an issue that you would even consider at the legislature?
Yeah, no. I mean, I believe that each county would come up with its own incentive package, and they would decide for themselves how much they want to spend on education and how much they want to spend on other services. So in my tax plan actually allows for a 3% local income tax, but no more. So it's actually a tax reduction for individual people.
Are there any of the constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot this November that you support?
I support three.
Which three?
I support the hunting and fishing, the Marcy's Law, and also the income tax cap.
And that's this edition of Coastline. David Perry, thanks so much for sharing your views.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Representative Ted Davis and Democratic challenger Marsha Morgan. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. Remember, early voting is underway. Election Day is November 6th. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.